Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
And good evening and welcome into the Toasted Tavern. I am Wags, joined alongside my good buddy and co-host, Scott Tobin. Yes, it has been a little bit of time since you guys saw our pretty faces here on your computer screens, phones, wherever you're watching us or listening to us from. And it has been a bit of an eventful last couple of weeks. So we're going to dive into all of the sports-related content here in just a few minutes. But once again, as always, we've got to catch up with each other. How are things going, Scott? I know we're getting close to the 4th of July. Crazy to think that it's only just about a week and a half away. But in the heat of the summer now.
Yeah, we're definitely in summertime in St. Louis. No question about that. And it's supposed to really warm up again over the weekend, the next couple of days. But yeah, man, I'm doing good. You know, we're in the heart of baseball season now. You know, we're seeing NBA draft happen tonight. The NHL playoffs still going strong, although we won't talk about the team that's winning because unfortunately the Cronkies are doing better than we had hoped. But, you know, football is just right around the corner. So it's a good time, man. And the Cardinals are tied for first place. So there's that. So, yeah, everything's good. How about yourself?
Oh, not too bad. Just kind of like you surviving the heat. We had a couple of triple-digit days the last couple of weeks. I know you got a chance to spend some time at the ballpark in those triple digits as well. But you got a chance to see some good games and an opportunity to see the Cardinals really dive back into the heart of the NL Central race. They had a massive four-game series with the Brewers that they just wrapped up today, which I think might have gone according to plan with who they had to face and how things kind of played out. I think you know, coming away with a split and tied for first place after the series was probably the scenario that most people thought was going to happen, especially the fact that you had to face Corbin Burnes right off the bat. But we'll talk a little bit about that in just a second. But overall, it's been a good couple of weeks. I got a chance to go see the new Jurassic World. We got to see Top Gun, Maverick as well over Memorial Day weekend. So got a chance to do some summer stuff, gearing up for some more hockey that's coming up. We've got a lot of stuff going on there. So plenty of things to keep my attention while we had the sports world just kind of going crazy as well. But let's get into the Cardinal talk because it's pretty much the dominant sport going on right now, at least here in the St. Louis area, because, you know, let's face it, the Blues aren't playing. We don't have an NBA team, and we technically don't even really have an NFL team. So the Cardinals are the main talk right now. And we were with you guys about 2 weeks ago, right after they wrapped up the series against Tampa Bay, which did not go well for the St. Louis Cardinals. And they were in the midst of getting ready to really be in a stretch where they were facing beatable team, the Reds, the Pirates, then you had the Red Sox and the Brewers, a tougher part of that stretch. And in that time, they've gone 8-6, and they're now, like we said, tied for first place with the Milwaukee Brewers. And it's kind of, we've seen a bit of positive and negative stuff going on in that time frame. Negative more so injury related than anything else, not to say poor performances, although we'll talk about Jack Flaherty in just a few minutes. But at this point in time, after 2 weeks of not being able to talk about the team, where do you see them at? Have they improved since the last time we talked about them? Yes, they're in first place now. Are they treading water, or have they gotten worse even with the 8-6 record? I mean, where do you see this team, seeing as how you see them on a regular basis?
I feel good about them. They definitely need to straighten a few things out. But, you know, I don't know how you can watch this team and not feel good about the offense. You know, you look what they did. You know, you talk about even this Boston-Milwaukee stretch. You know, they got shut out against Corbin Burnes. Other than that, they scored at least four runs in all six of those other games, which if you do that, you're going to win more games than you lose. I mean, you have a pretty elite offense if you're averaging four or five runs a game. And they're doing that this year. So I feel good about their offense. You know, I've got questions about their starting pitching and their bullpen, you know. Especially their starting pitching after this series in Milwaukee. I mean, you look what they did in these last 4 days. You didn't have a starter get past the fifth inning. You know, that's troubling when you're talking about Jack Flaherty, Adam Wainwright, Dakota Hudson, and none of them can get out of the fourth inning. You know, Flaherty gets through three. Hudson and Wainwright both go four and a third. I mean, that's just not good enough for your starting rotation. And then, you know, you talk about them being 8-6. – you got to look at their bullpen issues too. I mean, because they very easily could be 10-4, 11-5 in that range in these last few games, because you had, you know, Drew Verhagen blow up. You had a couple of other guys blow up and have bad outings. So, I mean, you know, there's some good and there's some bad. And maybe there's some positive because, you know, you've had problems with some of those middle relief guys. Maybe you found some answers in the last few days. Maybe Zach Thompson and Johan Oviedo have emerged to be those guys in the middle of that, in those sixth and seventh inning spots where you don't have to count on some of the guys that we've used, you know, the guys that Mo kind of went out and got in free agency this year and, you know, thought he could piece it together. You know, maybe some of these young guys are going to emerge and take those spots. And, you know, we'll see, because we're 3 weeks away, 3.5 weeks away from the trade deadline, basically. And you're going to get some guys back. It sounds like Tyler O'Neill is not going to be out as long as they thought. They think he's going to bounce right back as soon as those 10 days are out. And his hamstring's not that bad, so that's some positive. And you're about to go into a stretch where you've got the Cubs. You've got the Cubs and the Marlins coming up. So you've got a stretch where you can hopefully make some ground again. But overall, like I said, there have been some good, some bad. But for the most part, I feel pretty positive about where they are right now. How about yourself?
You know, I'm kind of right there with you. Like you said, the offense, outside of the fact that, they got shut out by Burns. And really, the game on Sunday against Boston, they were able to come back and have an opportunity in that game. But they went a long stretch before Yepes hit that home run that – it was once again, you score a bunch of runs in a game and then you kind of go silent for a couple of games. I'm not going to sit there and hang my hat on that, though, because they have shown the ability to score a lot of runs and over a long stretch of time. So offensively, I think I'm okay. And the fact that you lost Tyler O'Neill in that game kind of threw things out of whack as well. So I'm good on that. I'm right there with you as far as the starting pitching and the bullpen. And I think the bullpen is the bigger issue because – you have those guys, Verhagen and Whitgren and McFarland, that just haven't done a whole lot. And the fact that you took Andre Pallante out of that mix, who's been a very decent, serviceable starter. Yeah, he's only going to go 4 or 5 innings max, but that's something you can expect out of your fifth starter. You don't need that. You need more from your 1, 2, 3, and 4 starters to allow that fifth starter to go 4 or 5 innings. But to your point, Johan Oviedo came up, picked up his first win. You know, he was 0-9 coming into that bullpen session, essentially. Went 2 2/3, picked up the win against Milwaukee, looked really, really good. And, you know, you also can't look at it and go, okay, he's had 2 or 3 good outings. There you go. That's his spot. But I'm encouraged by what I see out of Oviedo. And yeah, Zach Thompson from the left side there might be the option. Another, just a young face that guys haven't seen. You know, they've seen TJ McFarland. They've seen these other guys multiple times. So you throw a guy out there that they haven't seen. He's young, crafty, and hits his spots. That's going to be good for them. And then you're going to have Jordan Hicks possibly coming back very soon. He just went out on a rehab assignment, and it's likely he's going to go back to the bullpen, which is where he should have been the entire season, because why would you stretch out a guy that's coming off an arm injury to be a starter? I don't know, but it looks like he's going to go back to the bullpen. So now, instead of having just 3 guys back there that you can kind of rely on, including Ryan Helsley, now you've got those 3 plus Thompson and Oviedo, who hopefully can continue their success. And if you can have the bonus of having a Jordan Hicks back there to kind of change things up, all of a sudden your bullpen does get a bit stronger. Yes, they probably do need one more piece back there, maybe a veteran piece. But at that point, you start to feel a little bit comfortable, and then you can shift your focus to the starting rotation. And outside of Miles Michaelis, everybody else in the starting rotation either needs to step it up or step it out. And I don't know. I mean, and that's hard for me to say because Adam Wainwright has been serviceable this year, and it's his final year. You're not going to take him out of the rotation. But once again, I think you're missing Molina to an extent, at least on his starts, because of the way that they work together. And Molina's going to be out actually probably a significant amount of time, because it doesn't sound like they want to rush him back anytime soon with the knee injury. So, you know, do you shift Waino down a little bit in that rotation? But can you? Because you don't have other starters that can go deep into games. So I'd like to see, you know, Matthew Liberatore come back up maybe and get an opportunity. If you're only going to have guys go 4 or 5 innings, why not give it to a young guy that needs the experience up here and give him a shot, give him an extended shot up here? What Liberatore has shown so far has been good. Not great, but he still would be his first opportunity in the majors. So looking at that, that's kind of what I would hope that the Cardinals do. And then they have to go out and make a move. I mean, they have to go out and make a move for a starting pitcher. It's non-negotiable. It's no question that starting now, they cannot wait until the deadline to start finding a way to bring in a starter. Starting right now, they have to start seeking out a potential trade partner because, yes, Jack Flaherty has come back, 2 starts, 6 innings total, 7 walks in a 7.50 ERA. Yes, it's 2 starts after being out most of the season, but I don't see the progression being super great, super quick. You're going to need something a little bit more immediate before Jack Flaherty maybe even looks like the Jack Flaherty of old.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that thought that Flaherty was going to just jump right back in there, after he looked good in 7 innings in AAA. It was only 7 innings. You know, anybody that thought he was going to jump in there and throw 80 or 90 pitches and be the old Jack Flaherty, you're crazy because, you know, it's going to take him probably 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 starts to build up and get comfortable. And right now you can tell he's just not comfortable on the mound. His mechanics are a little bit out of whack. Things aren't working. And you said it again. How much is Jack Flaherty missing Yadier Molina right now to be that calming influence to go out there and kind of help him figure things out? So that's going to be really interesting. I did hear something that made me happy. I did hear John Mozeliak say to our friend Tom Ackerman on Sunday morning on KMOX that right now at the trade deadline, a starting pitcher is the priority. So to hear Mo actually say those words makes me think that he actually realizes that they have to go do something. You know, again, I don't think it's going to be soon. I think it's going to be right around the deadline because nobody's going to make moves until then because there's too many teams. There are too many teams that are still in it. You know, and a couple of teams that you thought might be sellers a week or two ago have gotten hot. You know, we talked about the Phillies potentially being a team that could be a seller. All of a sudden, they're back in the hunt. We talked about Cleveland possibly, maybe a Shane Bieber. They're in first place all of a sudden in the American League Central. Yeah. So that's probably not going to happen. So, I mean, you look around and you go, okay, there's going to be a whole bunch of teams looking for pitching. And who's going to be available? You know, and when are those teams going to make those guys available? You know, and the problem the Cardinals have is that a bunch of the teams that are probably going to have pitchers available are the Pirates and the Reds and the Cubs. And guess what? They're not trading pitching to St. Louis. You know, so then you go back and you go, okay, well, Frankie Montas, we know Oakland's going to trade him. You know, look at him. He's 3-7 this year. His ERA is 3.85, so his ERA is not bad. And that's a bad Oakland team. So, you know, you move him. There's a possibility. I know people are going to go, really, you're going to go back to this? But I really, truly think that the guy that makes the most sense, and I know you're going to have to spend – and the reason I think it might work for the Cardinals is you might be able to eat most of this contract and not have to trade a lot to get him. I still think Madison Bumgarner might be the guy that makes the most sense for this ball club. You know, he's pitching pretty well in Arizona. His ERA is solid. His win-loss record's not great, but his ERA is good. He's throwing a decent amount of innings. And like we've talked about, the guy's a winner. You know, he's a postseason guy. He's a left-hander in that rotation. I think that might be the guy that you circle and go, the Cardinals may have to go hard after that. Because, again, you go after a guy like Montas in Oakland, Oakland's going to want a lot for it. You know, I don't know that Arizona's going to want a ton for Madison Bumgarner. You may be able to eat most of that contract and not have to trade a whole lot to get Bumgarner.
And I would be okay with it. I mean, it's depending on, like you said, what you give up. If you're just basically eating money and giving up a low-level prospect, it's 100% worth the risk because not only would you be bringing in another veteran bulldog, like what – I mean, he's not Adam Wainwright, but he's got the same work ethic as an Adam Wainwright. And to bring that back in, look what you saw with the success of J.A. Happ and John Lester last year. If you can bring that in and you can put that around, just like what they're doing with Albert Pujols, put that around some of these younger guys, especially a Matthew Liberatore. You put him around that, all of a sudden it not just makes your club potentially better on the field, but it also potentially sets up your future as well. And you're going to have people that say, oh, yeah, well, once again, they're going after the retreads. They're going after the guys that are going on the trash heap. And, yes, they have done that so many times in the past. But they also have a bit of a track record for getting it to work. I mean, that's the thing. Last year, every one of us, including ourselves, were crapping on the Happ and Lester thing because we're like, what are they going to bring to this team? And yet they went out there and – essentially secured the majority of the wins that this team needed to make it into the postseason. So if it's Bumgarner coming in, I'd be okay with it. I'd like to see what we could get out of him, and maybe it's not even something that gets us through into the postseason, but I feel like if Bumgarner were to come to St. Louis, put the birds on the bat, and get in front of that Busch Stadium crowd, you might be seeing something special out there at Busch Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, people say that. They're like, oh, Madison Bumgarner, another old guy, another retard. You got to remember, Madison Bumgarner, he's not old. He's 32 years old. You know, he's one of the most dominant, most postseason pitchers in baseball history. And he, like you said, he's a bulldog. He is Adam Wainwright in a lot of ways. I think he would be the perfect fit. And, yeah, he hasn't had a great couple of years in Arizona, but Arizona's not a good ball club.
Terrible.
You know, in his last couple of years, remember, everybody wanted Madison Bumgarner 2 or 3 years ago, and then San Francisco decided to hold on to him at the trade deadline, and that didn't work out. Bumgarner here would be huge. You know, he's got a couple of years left on his deal, which, again, if you have to pay that money, it's worth it because you don't know what your rotation is going to look like next year. There's no guarantees that Waino's coming back next year. You know, we don't know. Miles Michaelis has one more year left on his deal, but, you know, he could get hurt again. You know, we don't know what Jack Flaherty's going to do. I mean, it would just be a veteran guy to come in and really be a good piece to this ball club. I mean, there are other options out there, potentially, hopefully. But, when you look at it, Bumgarner might be the guy that you don't have to give up 3 or 4 of your top prospects to get.
Well, and the Cardinals are going to need more than one starting pitcher as well. It's not a one-trade-fix-all. Now, you hope maybe that is the case. Maybe you do go out and get him, and Flaherty in the next couple starts reverts back to what he did, what he's been used to. You've got him and Michaelis up at the top. You get a Steven Matz back potentially as well, and then Wainwright and Bumgarner, and then all of a sudden you've got those extra pieces in a Liberatore or Dakota Hudson, who up until today – hadn't been that bad. Yeah, he gave up 6 runs a couple starts ago, but he went 7 innings for 3 straight games, gave this team a lot of the innings that they needed to get to this point, especially with the multiple doubleheaders that they had in the past week. So, you know, if you get that and you get the guys back from injury and they start producing, maybe Bumgarner is the only thing that you need. But I think as we've seen with this team, injuries are prevalent throughout the year. The fact that Tyler O'Neill was out for 3 weeks, came back for a couple weeks, and then left again with a hamstring injury, and yes, he's very likely coming back sooner rather than later, it just sits there and shows you almost can't have enough of that depth and that of the opportunities, and you can't have enough guys that can come in here and be veteran presences that will help you along to the postseason. And I like you said, though, there's not a whole lot of options right now. And, you've got, the Cubs and Marlins, like you said, coming into town. But then you go on a huge stretch. I mean, huge stretch over the next 2 weeks after that. You've got 3 against the Phillies in Philadelphia, then 4 in Atlanta against the Braves. Then you host the Phillies for 4 and host the Dodgers for 3. That right there could make or break your season right there. And if for some reason you're able to go out there and knock the Phillies out of first place and really kind of put them on a tailspin down, maybe that's how you go out and get a starting pitcher from them as well. But there's a lot of question marks still, I think, going forward, because there's a lot of opportunity for this team to either jump up high in the standings or really tank very fastly. And it's all dependent on the starting pitching.
Yeah. I mean, again, you look at this ball club and I hear people say, oh, this team, they're not beating other really good teams. Well, when you go back and look at it, it's not like the other teams are beating them badly. Think about it. The Tampa series, Verhagen blows that first game. You should have won at least one of those games. You were 1 out away from that win. You should have won that third game. You were right in that game. The Boston game, if not for Verhagen and McFarland giving up late home runs, your offense comes back and wins both of those games in the 8th and 9th inning against Boston's bullpen. They win both of those games, if not for 3-run homers by those guys in the 8th inning in games 1 and 3. So it's not like they beat you up. The Mets, you lost a couple of games to the Mets. One of those games you lost because Gallegos forgot to cover first base with 2 outs in the 9th inning. The other game, he gave up an extra inning 2-run homer in the 11th inning. It's not like the Mets beat you up. You were in those games. Nobody, you know, when you really look at it, the Cardinals have not been really outplayed by anybody. You know, they've been in every single game. They've not looked overmatched. You know, you beat up the Padres, who are in first place in that division now. You know, you talk about the Dodgers. The Dodgers don't really scare me. I mean, they really don't. You look at the Dodgers, and the Dodgers only have three more wins than you do. You know, I mean, so the Cardinals are not in that bad a shape. I know people want to complain, but let's just put this in perspective. If I told you, forget what the Cardinals' win-loss record is right now. If I told you, just say we're talking about the Cardinals, and you said, how are the Cardinals? And I said, well, Jack Flaherty's pitched six innings this year. Alex Reyes hasn't pitched at all. Jordan Hicks has missed most of the season. Steven Matz hasn't pitched for a month. Yadi's been on the disabled list twice. Tyler O'Neill's been on the disabled list twice. Dylan Carlson's been on the disabled list. Paul O'Neill played 20 games, and you sent him to the minors, and you haven't seen him since. You've got four rookies in your starting lineup pretty much every day. Andre Pallante is one of your starting pitchers. Would you feel very good about this team?
Oh, not at all. But I also think Cardinals fans probably expected something along these lines too. But I get your point, yeah.
But you're 8 games over .500 and you're tied for first place with all of that stuff going on. So you got to give this team a whole lot of credit. You know, I mean, no doubt, you know, a lot of it has to do with the fact that your first baseman and your third baseman have been pretty awesome most of the year. You know, there's people that want to complain about Nolan Arenado. Arenado's really hot right now, too. He just missed his second game-tying home run late in the game today. It ended up being a double. But, you know, between what him and Paulie have done, it's crazy. You know, Goldschmidt, they're probably – well, Goldschmidt is the leader in the MVP race right now, and Arenado's got to be probably third or fourth. You know, I mean, that's how good these guys are. And heck, right now, Brendan Donovan, I mean, you have three guys that are on your team that are probably fighting each other for Rookie of the Year at this point. When you look at their numbers.
Yeah, and you know, Nolan Gorman, you know, he dropped off a little bit. He entered June hitting .361, dropped down to about .247 by the start of this Milwaukee series. So he kind of hit a bit of a divot. But then he had a 4-for-4 game, took that average up to .280 and came back down a little bit after an 0-for-4 day yesterday, had two hits today. So he's starting to kind of bounce back a little bit and readjust to what Major League Baseball pitchers are throwing. I mean, that's the really good thing to see out of him is he is adjusting at this level. It's not so much that he's just out there hitting mistakes. He's adjusting at this level. Yeah, he's going to go through some times where he dips down a little bit. But as we saw this, you know, the last couple of games, he can make changes and then end up being successful. And then you talk about Brendan Donovan, who has just been the guy who's come in. He's been the Tommy Edman from a couple of years ago, where he's burst onto the scene, plays a bunch of different positions, been clutch, has brought an energy to this team that I wouldn't say was lacking, because I think this team does have a really good energy around it. They've got talent, youth, fun. I mean, it's all there, but he just brings another level to it. And now you've got that going on, and who knows how long it's going to last. Hopefully it's another Edmund situation where it lasts a long time, where we start to go, okay, yeah, he's not a one-hit wonder. He's going to be a guy that can produce at this level and with this team for a couple of years. So you've got that. What you talk about injuries, Harrison Bader's kind of been in and out. We haven't really talked or heard much of him. He's been at the bottom of the lineup for the most part. Even Dylan Carlson's been a guy that you haven't heard a whole lot of. And it, not so much because he's been bad or just been missing. He's just been going out there and being consistent. Yeah, he's had some injuries as well. And that's the thing. This team is consistently dealing with injuries left and right. And yet you have guys that are stepping up. Juan Yepes has been up and down throughout this season, but he's been clutch in moments. The young guys are doing what they need to do. And it's actually kind of helping the fact that these veterans aren't doing a whole lot. I mean, the fact that Albert Pujols is being trotted out there against righties still when he essentially was brought in to hit left-handed pitching. You know, I mean, I get that you want to make sure Albert gets at least one game in a series on the road to kind of say, hey, this is it. Here you go. But the dude's hitting .127 against right-handed hitters. And, yeah, part of that's because your left-handed DHs aren't doing a whole lot. Corey Dickerson's hurt right now. But Are you surprised that they're still throwing him out there against right-handed pitchers, looking at his numbers and just knowing that he was brought in mainly to hit against lefties?
Yeah, I am to a certain extent. You know, there are some righties that you can see that he can still hit. But yeah, overall, I wish they would not throw him out there as often against right-handed pitching. I'm a little surprised by that, especially when you've got all these other guys, like you talked about, the Epezes and the Gormans and the Donovans and, you know, everybody else. Even Lars Nubar is starting to hit a little bit off the bench as well. So I don't think you're going to see it happen as much as we move into the second half of the season. I think he's going to go more strictly against lefties, you know, as these guys advance. But you talked about Nolan Gorman really quick. You know, if somebody would have told me, if, you know, we all weren't sure what to think about Nolan Gorman. Everybody talked about, oh, he's going to strike out so much. He played in his 30th game. If somebody would have told you that he's played 30 games now, he's hitting .265 with six homers and 18 RBIs, I'd say that's pretty darn good. You know, he's got seven games where he's had at least two hits. He's got five games where he's had at least three hits and two games where he's had four hit games. So I think he has kind of surpassed what people kind of expected when you talked about him being up here and maybe being overmatched a little bit. And then Yepes has kind of done the same thing. You know, they've just come through in big spots. And this team definitely wouldn't be where they are without all three of those guys. They've been huge for this team.
And the second base defense hasn't been bad either for Nolan Gorman. I mean, I think a lot of people were questioning what he could do there, but he's not an above average defender, but he's not just an average defender either. He's making some plays out there that you go, oh, okay, I see what you're doing here. And then you got Tommy Edman over at shortstop, who once again, people were questioning, hey, can he do it? And, you know, when this is all going down, I likened him to a little bit to David Eckstein. Like, yeah, Eckstein came up to the minors playing shortstop, whereas Edman didn't in a sense, but it's still the same kind of concept. Yeah, he's a smaller guy, but he knows how to play the spot, and he knows how to get the ball from short to first, and he's done that beautifully for this team. And it helps, once again, that you have a guy like Paul Goldschmidt that is like a vacuum over there and will get anything that's thrown his way. So it does help, but you have that trust level that you know you can go out there and make a play. So the fact that the defense hasn't suffered as well has been another big piece of this. And in fact, the Cardinals are one of the best defensive teams in the league, and that's another part of why they're at where they're at. And if you can get the bullpen fixed and if you can get the starting rotation kind of more consistent, all of a sudden this looks like a team that's incredibly dangerous. And just to go back real quick to some of the standings real quick, we had Philadelphia in first place. They're still 8.5 games back in the East behind the Mets and the Braves, but they're two games over 500 as well. So it's not like they're out of things right now. With the Cardinals being at 40-32, that's just a four-game lead over them for a wild card position. So they're not out of it, and you've got a big set of games coming up against them, the Braves, and the Dodgers. You have to go out there with the Cubs in town now and the Marlins coming up after that. I never want to sit there and say you have to sweep both series, but if you can find a way to win those games, it's going to be huge going forward.
Yeah, the Marlins scare me more than the Cubs do because of the pitching.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be interesting to see if we run into Sandy Alcantara and a couple of those other really good pitchers that we know that the Marlins have. So their pitching worries me, but there's no doubt that the Cardinals are talented enough that they can win, you know, 5 out of 6 out of this homestand at least. And they're playing really well at home right now too. You know, they feel like they can come back when they're behind. They've really played well at Busch Stadium in the last few homestands. So I think it's going to be a fun next few days at the ballpark.
Yeah, and they have to, because Milwaukee gets 3 against the Blue Jays and 2 against the Rays. And then after that, they have 4 against the Pirates, 3 against the Cubs, 3 against the Pirates, 2 against the Twins, 4 against the Giants, and 4 against the Rockies before facing the Twins again. So the July for the Milwaukee Brewers, you gotta make some distance between yourself and them by the end of June. Otherwise, this could look a lot different post 4th of July at nearing the trade deadline.
Yeah, although everybody said the same thing in May too. Remember, the Brewers had an easy schedule and the Cardinals' schedule was brutal, and everybody said, "Oh man, this is gonna make or break the Cardinals," and they played really well. So, you know, we'll just see what happens. That's all you can do.
That is all we can do. And let's jump back into the injury history real quick, because, you know, we do have some injuries that we have to talk about. We threw out the names, you know, Stephen Matz, Corey Dickerson, and Jordan Hicks. TJ McFarland also went on the disabled list with what is being termed as COVID. So who knows when he's going to come back, how they're going to play that out. Because, you know, with McFarland, Wickren, and Verhagen, as we said, kind of struggling in the bullpen, is this more of a shuffle off to the distance kind of move for McFarland? And that's kind of dependent on Zach Thompson. If he goes out there and continues to pitch the way he's pitched so far, unfortunately, T.J. McFarland's days are probably numbered here in St. Louis.
Yeah, they very well could be. You know, I think him and Drew Verhagen are both kind of looking over their shoulders at this point.
Yeah, 100%, especially with Jordan Hicks out on a rehab assignment as well. I feel like if you get Hicks back there in the next week or so, you know, feeling better and kind of progressing, that's going to be the moves that are made, is, you know, McFarland, Verhagen out, Thompson stays, Hicks coming in as well. And if you can get that bullpen steadied, like we said, you feel a whole lot better going into, you know, the trade deadline for sure. And then you've got Steven Matz, who we said has been out since May. He is essentially one step away from being back. He is throwing off the mound. He's thrown off the mound the last couple of days, and he's very likely going to be sent out on a rehab assignment. So what are your expectations with Steven Matz? Because I know that he is not been what we expected, but are you thinking he's going to make an impact the way that the rest of the season goes on? I mean, is he has a chance to do that?
He does. He does. And I mean, we saw glimpses in that first, in those first few starts. He had a couple of games where he pitched really well, and then he would have a bad one. You know, so he had a little shoulder issue. If he gets that straightened out, you know, you'd like to believe that he can be a solid guy that gives you six innings every time he goes out there and is, you know, the guy that he was last year, which he was 14-6 with a mid-3 ERA. If he could get something close to that for the second half of the season, I think you'd feel really good about it. You know, and again, we talk about straightening out this bullpen. You know, if you get Jordan Hicks back, and then we talked about Oviedo and Thompson filling in, then if you get another starting pitcher, then you move Andre Pallante back to the bullpen, then that bullpen really looks pretty solid again. So, I mean, there are some health things that are going to straighten this team out as far as pitching, and then you still need to make that one move, and you can really have a strong pitching staff going down the stretch.
And that's exactly what the Cardinals need. All right, anything besides the fact that Cubs are in town, what's going on down at the ballpark this weekend that fans need to make sure they head down to do?
Make sure you are hydrated. Let's go with that one first of all, because it's supposed to be 95 tomorrow and right around 100 on Saturday. So it's going to be nice and hot. Make sure you bring your water to the ballpark. Be hydrated. Just going to throw this out because people forget this. This is just a little public service announcement. Your aerosol cans, your suntan lotion that are in aerosol cans, you cannot bring those into the ballpark. Just so you know, because people get really upset because they get confiscated and thrown away. Don't bring aerosol sunscreen to the ballpark over the weekend. Because
just bring the stuff you slather on by hand.
That's right. And we have suntan stations in the ballpark where you can go walk it up and slap a little in your hand and wipe it on and you're all good. But other than that, there's a couple of good promotions going on this weekend. So fans will have that to look forward to. And it's Cubs Cardinals, man. 45,000 plus all 3 days. It's going to be loud and crazy. And, you know, there'll probably be some altercations in the stands. There usually are. So, yeah, just be prepared because it's usually the rowdiest of the homestands when the Cubs roll into town.
Oh, yes, it is. It's the best, friendliest rivalry out there in sports, I think, right now. And I use the word friendliest in quotations because there is a lot of animosity that goes between. Because you got to think, there are Cubs fans now that are clamoring for Jason Hayward to be released. And, you know, you look back on that and you go, okay, he wanted to be there because of all the youth and potential on that team. And now here we are a few years later and the Cardinals are the team with the youth and they didn't trade anybody away. And now they're sitting up near the top of the division.
Yep. And you look at it, you know, you look at that year Jason Hayward had here in St. Louis. You know, he was in the MVP conversation. He had 100-plus RBIs, 20-something home runs, and he hit 290, I believe, won a gold glove. He hasn't done any of those things since he got to Chicago. Not even close.
No. And, you know, you look back and you go, okay, that's one of those contracts that you're like, okay, glad we didn't sign that one. And who knows if there would have been any difference with him staying here in St. Louis. Maybe he does hit better. Maybe his fielding is there and he's an all-star or what have you. But you have to sit there and, you know, take those things into account when you look at signings and trades and things like that. Yeah, you can make an immediate knee-jerk reaction, but you got to wait, especially in the case of signings, a couple years to really sit there and go, okay, glad we didn't or glad we did. And it's a hard thing to do, to wait as a fan for that time to come, because you want to win championships. You want to be there every year, and you want those guys to be productive with the, you know, the contracts that they sign. But you look back and you, okay, good job. Nice job not making that move. And they've done it in the past. You know, trades have happened that way and signings have happened that way. So that's why it's hard to judge these general managers in the moment, because you can't forward think in this industry.
No, well, just think about, here's three guys that fans were clamoring for and mad that the Cardinals didn't go get. Where would the Cardinals be had they signed Jason Hayward, David Price, and Giancarlo Stanton?
In the poorhouse.
Yeah, we'd be right there with the Cubs.
Yeah, and now, you know, Aaron Judge might be up and available as well. You know, free agency coming up next year, and I don't think Cardinals fans want Aaron Judge here anyway. I don't think that's a oh my gosh, fans are clamoring to be here, him to be here. But you look at it and you go, hey, the Cardinals, yes, they may be tight-fisted when it comes to their money, but they also don't go out there and spend frivolously. I mean, Matt Holliday's contract with the Cardinals was the longest and most expensive one, essentially, that they ever gave out. And that's when you have Albert Pujols on your team for a long time. So, you know, they've done a good job of really identifying long-term contracts. You know, maybe some of these short terms, you know, we just go back to Ty Wigginton. That's all you got to say. You know, they miss on some of these contracts, but you can't hit on every single one of them. And, you know, you look down the street at Doug Armstrong and you laud him for all the great trades and signings that he's made. He's also made some poor trades and signings with this team as well. But I think the Stanley Cup really helped kind of gloss over some of those. But he's done a great job with everything else around that. So it's hard, you know, and that's why we're not GMs. That's why we're armchair general managers, because we can sit back and go, yeah, I do this and that, and look how well that worked out. But when we're wrong, we just turn off our television and go, okay, move on.
Right, yeah. No, you have to give, like you said, you have to give the GMs credit for the moves they don't make, because some of those big ones that everybody wanted, you know, the best thing that happened is that they didn't happen. Just like the fact that, you know, Albert not signing here in 2012 is the best thing that ever happened to the Cardinals.
Yeah, because then you got Molina, you've got, Wainwright, Waka, you got with the draft pick, who he looked pretty good in Boston the other night. That was a great duel between him and Wainwright. So, yeah, I mean, you look at the long-term ramifications and go, okay, yeah, they didn't sign him long-term. They got what they got. They got a chance to go to a couple more, you know, deep playoff runs. Maybe not a championship out of it, but they got to go to the World Series again. So there's all that stuff that goes into it. And now you're sitting here 10 years later almost, and Albert's back. It's the final run. Now Cardinals fans are able to celebrate what he did here. Yes, the animosity may be for some people still there, but I think 10 years people realize what exactly happened, and now they're welcoming him back with open arms. You get him and Molina and Wainwright and potentially all three of their final years. I'd say that's a complete win if you're a Cardinals fan, because you got the championships with Albert. You saw his best years. You got some more playoff runs and some more opportunities for championships after he left, and now you get to celebrate the end of his career and a chance to see him maybe achieve history in a Cardinal uniform.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, talking about trade, you brought up a name. A guy who may be available at the trade deadline, because he's on a one-year deal and he's pitching pretty well. If he was available and you needed a starting pitcher, would Michael Waka be a guy with the way he's pitched in Boston this year? On a one-year deal, would you look at that?
I mean, price. If the price is right.
He's making a couple million dollars.
Yeah, I mean, if Boston's not going to sit there and ask for the world, which I don't think they would, I mean, it'd be an interesting way to entertain that, you know, kind of get the old gang back together. I mean, what's the Almost Sunny in Philadelphia kind of thing? Getting the gang back together. It might not be a bad thing. I would be interested in that as well. Although, you know, you brought up the name Kyle Gibson last time. That's another one that you could look at as being, hey, a guy that wants to be in St. Louis potentially. You know, bringing these guys back and having some sort of devil magic, as they always say, this might be the year that that happens. I mean, if the baseball gods wanted a lot of people happy, they would get the gang back together and win a World Series. And when I say a lot of people, you know, St. Louis fans, because not everybody in the country likes the Cardinals. So, right. I mean, everybody wants the baseball gods to do something for their team. But I think, you know, outside of New York, St. Louis has the most fans that want something to happen because of what they've got here.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at the National League, and like I said, we've seen the Padres, we've seen the Giants, the Mets beat us, but, you know, a pitch here or there in that series is completely different. You know, you look at this Cardinal team, you make a move or two. I don't see any reason why this team can't be in the NLCS and playing for the World Series this year. I really don't.
I'm right there with you. And a couple of years ago, I was not. I thought this team was well on the outside looking in. But you see the fact that, you know, Max Scherzer's had to deal with injury. Yeah, he's going through his rehab right now to get back with the Mets. And that's definitely a scary proposition. You don't want to see Max Scherzer in the playoffs. But outside of that, there's not a whole lot of pitching that scares me in the National League. And there's not a lot of offenses that necessarily scare me if you have the right rotation and bullpen. Right now, any offense scares me with the Cardinals pitching staff. So, I mean, it could be anybody. But if you solidify those, you have an offense that can beat any pitcher out there. And you'll have a rotation and a bullpen that can shut down pretty much any offense. I'm good with that. And this team has also shown that they can play against some of the best in the American League as well. Obviously, we're not going to get a chance to see every good team in the American League, but they've held their own, as you said earlier, with pretty much every team in the American League that they face that's near the tops of their division. So I'm more confident in this Cardinals team than I think I would have been coming into this season. And I'll be honest, I haven't had a chance to watch a ton of the games, but the games I've seen, I've been happy with.
Yeah, I mean, they're competitive. They're in every game. You know, and when you look at it, it's funny because you talk about it. The games they lose, you know, they're losing games by one or two runs. They're not getting blown out. They're blowing out a lot of people. I mean, Cardinals have scored 10, 11 runs more times than just about, I think, the Yankees and the Dodgers are the only two teams in baseball that have scored double-digit runs more than the Cardinals have this year. So, I mean, their offense is capable of doing that. And, you know, their pitching staff is going to get better. At some point, Jack Flaherty is going to round into shape. Might not happen until August, but if you get in the postseason and you have Jack Flaherty at peak Jack Flaherty, that's exactly when you want him to be there. You know, and if you do go out and make a move to get another guy and you have Waino and you have Hudson, I think you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, and howdy Blues fan reacts. And yes, congratulations, 20 full Cardinals games he's watched this year. That's right. Definitely more than I have.
Good job.
Yeah, we got to get Blues fan reacts back to St. Louis. We have to start the petition and the GoFundMe to get him here. You know, we had if you are on Twitter, there's a bunch of guys that I follow regularly. One of them is a big Blues fan. He actually moved from, I believe it was Washington, D.C. He actually just recently moved to St. Louis from D.C. So we're trying to collect all the Cardinals and Blues fans from around the country. We've got to bring them all to St. Louis so we can have everybody that's a fan of St. Louis sports teams here in St. Louis, because that's the best way to have it. Everybody here in town.
There you go. There you go.
And 20 more games than I've watched my entire life. Well, you know, you've been a Blues fan all your life, so you've suffered enough heartbreak, and now you get a chance to see a storied franchise continuing to win. That's exactly what the Cardinals do. All right, let's move away from the Cardinals. We've talked about them long enough. Really just a lot of news and notes around the rest of the sports world. You know, you talked about the team that will not be named in the Stanley Cup Finals. They hold a 3-1 series lead after an overtime victory last night. A winner that probably shouldn't have happened. You know, Nazem Kadri gets the game winner, but just so happened there were 6 Colorado Avalanche on the ice for that game-winning goal that was not caught. Once again, it's splitting hairs. I think every team has had a moment that, especially in overtime, that didn't go the way that they wanted it. It's not so much that Colorado won and the way they won it. We got to set that aside. It's more about just taking some of these collective playoff overtime goals that we've seen over the last few years that have been questionable and wondering if maybe the NHL needs to find a way to, institute some sort of just blanket replay for at least overtime goals in the playoffs to make sure that the right call was made so that the right team wins in the right way.
So wait a minute. You're telling me that a Stan Kroenke team won a playoff game in overtime on a bad call by a referee? Huh. Has that ever happened before in another sport potentially that got them to a Super Bowl a couple of years ago potentially?
It's almost like this guy's got a little bit of money.
Yeah. Is there a pattern there that I'm seeing for him?
I mean, yeah, there's a little bit there. And honestly, I don't care who wins this series. I would love to see Tampa come back and win it. Obviously, for Pat Maroon to get his fourth in 4 years, that'd be great. But honestly, I kind of want to see Colorado win just to shut Avalanche fans up. Like, okay, you got your Stanley Cup. Congratulations. Now let's move on and stop complaining about not, you know, being a great team and not winning a cup. I know it's not going to happen because now they're going to be like, oh yeah, well now we're going to win multiples because we're such a dynasty and blah blah blah. Just get it over with. Just let them win, get it over with, and then they can stop all their high and mighty bitching about not having won a championship. Okay, just take it, go, and then we'll see you next year. I'm done with Colorado, and I don't hate Colorado fans. I really don't. You know, some of the people we've been able to interact with this show and other shows has been great with Colorado Avalanche fans. They really are good. But you just hop on there, and it's not just Avalanche fan. It seems like fans of every opposing team. There's always those idiots out there that just say the stupidest things. And we've got them here with the Blues and Cardinals too. So don't get me wrong. It's not just exclusive to opponents. But I just want Colorado to go away for a little bit.
Yeah, I can't root for a Kroenke team ever. I want Tampa Bay to come back. I can't see that guy holding another trophy. I can't handle it.
No, not at all. And Blues Fan Reacts is right. Corey Perry's finals losing curse is stronger than Maroon's winning blessing. So Corey Perry plays for Tampa Bay. He could lose in the finals in 5 games in 3 consecutive years, and that will offset Pat Maroon's opportunity to win 4-4. Like, apparently losing is stronger than winning in a lot of these streaks.
Yeah, that happens sometimes. That's the way that works.
That it does. A team that did win a championship, though, Golden State. Golden State Warriors took out the Boston Celtics, winning their fourth title since 2015. Surprisingly, Steph Curry got his first finals MVP in this championship run. And you look at it and you go, they were the worst team just a couple years ago. And then they got healthy. They dealt with injuries. They got healthy. They made some good moves. They spent a little bit more than the cap. They're $24.6 million over the tax right now. But they went out and they won a championship. And it looks like it could be the last hurrah for this Golden State team. Yes, they're probably bringing back a majority of these players. But, you know, Clay, Steph, these guys are getting older. And it may not be in their bodies to make another long run like this. So are we looking at the end of the Warriors, or do you think they may have one more shot next year?
I think they're going to have one more shot because I think Klay Thompson is going to be better next year, a full year removed from all of his injuries, you know, a full year playing again. I think Klay's going to be even better next year than he was this year. Oof. And so I think they got one more run in them. You know, they've got some young kids on that team too. But I think Steph and Klay, Draymond, they have one more run with the young supporting cast they have. Andrew Wiggins and those guys really showed up and played well. And so I think they make one more run. I think it's the last one, but I think they've got one more championship in Golden State.
It's a tough hill to climb out there in the West because so many teams are just so good out there in the West. It's going to be a tough climb for sure. But, you know, you've got the winning pedigree out there. I mean, looking at it outside of Golden State, I mean, yeah, you got LeBron with the Lakers that has the experience of winning championships, but outside of that, no one in the West besides Golden State has that championship pedigree. So you look at it and you go, in my mind, it's always young teams have to learn to win by losing. A lot of these teams are just now getting to that point where they are losing in those winning moments. So, you know, outside of Golden State and the Lakers, in a sense, are there any other teams that you look at and you go, that's a team that can challenge next year?
Did you say the Lakers?
Look, Caveat: LeBron has championship rings. Okay,
they're not challenging anything, though, man. I'm sorry, they might be challenging for the worst record in the league next year, but that's about all they're challenging for. That team's bad. They're not going anywhere. You know, you look around Denver. If Denver's healthy, Denver could be really tough. You know, you still have to look at Phoenix. You know, Phoenix has been there a couple of years. That's a team that you got to look at. You would think at some point Dallas is going to make that next step, potentially. But again, you know, no team in pro sports has the championship pedigree that Golden State does at this point. Because you talk about the players, but then look at their coach. Think about all the championships Steve Kerr's now been involved in as a player and a coach. I mean, what, it's at 9 championship games now, NBA Finals he's been in now as a player and coach. I mean, that's almost unbelievable, man. And, you know, I think, like I said, I think they're at the top of the mountain, and I don't think anybody gets there. I think they win it again. And the East is still, you know, the East just isn't quite there yet. I don't think Boston's going to be a whole lot better unless they make a bunch of moves next year. I just think Golden State, you know, if they bring that whole team back, I think they might be better next year than they were this year, honestly.
That's crazy, but I don't disagree with you at all. And, you know, Blues Fan Reacts is talking about Utah clearly being the next dynasty. Well, they don't have a coach. Quinn Snyder left. And I think that's as crazy as that sounds because of what we experienced here with Mizzou and what Quinn Snyder ended up leaving us with. It's going to be hard for them to kind of bounce back a little bit. I think he had a lot of really good influence on that franchise, and Utah's really going to hurt not having Quinn Snyder there.
Well, from everything you hear, the team doesn't necessarily really go bare, and some of the other guys don't necessarily get along out there either. That's part of the reason why Snyder left. So, I mean, there's talent in Utah. We've seen it the last few years, but, you know, if they're not cohesive, that's going to be tough.
And Blues Fan Reacts wants to know, do you want to volunteer? You want to volunteer to coach the Utah Jazz? Well, if I get the paycheck, hell yeah, I'll volunteer. Utah's so boring, Snyder leaving was headline news for 5 days. Look, I've been to Utah, okay? I got a chance to work there for a couple weeks. And yeah, maybe it is a bit boring, but you guys got a hell of a view out there and some pretty damn good weather. So I'll take 5 days of hearing about Quinn Snyder leaving. If I get a chance to look out at the mountains and breathe in that nice clean air all the time, yeah, you got to deal with some religious people out there, but that's everywhere nowadays.
Yeah, I'm going to pass on the whole Salt Lake City thing. Sorry.
Oh, boy. Well, you talked about the draft going on in the NBA tonight. Round one is getting close to wrapping up. And just want to touch real quick on the number one overall pick, Orlando. Ended up going with Paolo Banchero out of Duke. You know, 17.5 points per game, 7.8 rebounds, 3.2 assists per game in 39 games. It was a bit of a surprise that he was the number one pick. There were a couple guys that could have gone in that number one spot. So just looking at Banchero, what do you think, did the Magic make the right choice in that?
I was really surprised to see that be the number one pick, to be honest with you. We'll see how it plays out. You know, depends on how Orlando's wanting to play, but that's definitely not what most people expected to be your number one pick in this draft.
Sorry, Blues Fan Reactions talk about the fact that Utah apparently does not have clean air. Well, when I was there, it was. So I'm blaming it all on Blues Fan Reacts that Utah has poor air quality now. So all of his hot air is rising to the surface and making it poor quality. Okay? All right, Mason, that's enough for you. It's enough for you. Jumping over into the NFL, we do have to move on to some sad news. A couple of deaths, especially in the Baltimore Ravens organization. Not only did they lose 26-year-old linebacker Jalen Ferguson over the last couple of days, but a man that was kind of a big persona, not just on the field, but in, you know, sideline reporting as well. The Goose, Tony Siragusa, also passed away at 55. So Ravens organization getting hit hard the last couple of days. Ferguson's death remains a bit of a mystery, as does Saragusa's at the moment. You know, no definitive answers as to why both of these men passed, but Ravens fans, our condolences for sure. And you know, just looking at a young guy in his prime, really pushing hard to be a big factor on a Ravens team. It's tough when you lose somebody that young and somebody that was going to make an impact this year. So Jalen Ferguson, man, that's a tough one.
Yeah, that's hard when you, like you said, a young player like that trying to make it in the NFL. You feel bad for the team and his family. Condolences to all of them. And then, like you said, the Goose was just a big he was a big personality. Like you said, on the football field, on television, you know, just a fun-loving guy and a really talented defensive tackle for a long time with the Colts and then the Ravens, Super Bowl champion in Baltimore, and a TV personality on Fox for quite a few years. So, again, condolences to those organizations, his family, and the Fox family as well.
That is very true. And this actually is a great question. You know, do we think that these young football deaths are a football culture issue? You know, young football players are passing away all the time. Is it a pressure thing, not enough managerial support, or is it something else? I mean, not knowing essentially the cause of death for Ferguson or even some of these other young guys, but is there some sort of culture issue in football that takes these young men? I mean, they're working hard in heavy pads, out in the heat. The NFL has tried to move away from some of these, you know, very extreme practices in heat and things like that. But, I mean, you played football, so you kind of know what this kind of culture is like. Is it something along those lines, or is it more so just related to the fact that these guys are getting bigger, stronger, faster in an industry that essentially is basically saying you're putting your entire life on the line because you want this money because we're going to give it to you if you can produce, and if you can't, then you're not getting it. You're getting cut and being shelved.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of both. You know, it's a little bit of, you know, pushing your body hard, you know, bigger, stronger, faster. Unfortunately, a lot of times with young players, you know, it also involves steroids or some kind of growth hormone that can affect your body. Not saying that's the cause here, but you see that happen a lot. Where those kinds of things happen. And then it's just the push of your body. When you get big guys like that, you know, unfortunately, sometimes your body out, you build your body up and your body can't hold up to that physical, to the physical you toll you put on it, whether it be your heart or lungs or whatever. And so, you know, it's just a combination of both of those things. It's the desire to work hard and get bigger. And then sometimes just the amount of time you spend in the gym and the effort that you put in. And sometimes other things go involved with that.
And this is something I saw the other day that really made me think about this as well. Torrey Smith came out just the other day and kind of ripped into the concept of NFL rookie dinners and the fact that, you know, the entire team will go out and put a tab on the rookies and basically run up a huge bill. And he said that Anquan Boldin was actually a guy that really kind of reversed that thinking for him, at least for Torrey Smith, about like, hey, these guys are coming in fresh out of college. They have no really people in their lives that are looking out over the top of them to try and protect them. And then you've got a group of guys that are saying, hey, yeah, you just got this huge check. We're going to run up all this huge bill, make you guys pay it. And the money concept is not there right off the bat. And it's not every organization or team that does that. And I'm sure that they have in place people that will help them. But it seems like, especially in football, you get this a lot where these men are coming in unprepared because of the pressures that are put on them in college. And then they're coming right into a league that, in all essence, wants to take these young guys and pay them on the cheap, put them out there and destroy their bodies. And it's not until later on that they realize, man, I really should have been doing this. And there are guys in the league that are trying to look out for these young men, and they do their best, the best that they can. Yes, they have the rookie symposium and all those things, but I still feel like, even because we're hearing stories like this still to this day, that there's still more that can be done. You know, is it something that's incumbent upon the colleges to really try and help these men? I mean, you look at it now, even down in high school, you still, and it's not just football players, you don't have basic life lesson classes. No kid knows how to balance a checkbook. Hell, most of them don't even know what a check is because everything's so digital now that it's the way it goes. But you don't have life lessons being taught at the lowest levels, and now they're getting into college. They don't know how to handle money. They don't know what any of this stuff means. And then you get into this big world of big time money, and you have no lessons that have been taught to you, regardless of how well your parents have done it, or even some of the mentors that you have growing up or at, on this NFL team or professional team. Like, where is it incumbent to help these men and women, in a sense, kind of get the lessons and help make their lives a little bit better earlier on, so they don't have to worry about this stuff later in life?
No, I see what you're saying. That's a tricky question, though. You know, at what point, you know, where does that responsibility end for a high school or a college to say, okay, we can only give you so much. You know, you have to do some of these things on your own. You have to reach out and try to figure some of this stuff out on your own without us kind of spoon feeding you everything and holding your hand and walking you through everything. But I also see where you're coming from, where some of these guys need that, where they need somebody to pretty much say, okay, here we are, let's figure this out, let's help you figure it out. So it's a tricky question. It's a tricky situation, tricky question. Exactly how far schools and even NFL teams, you know, the league should go to try to help these kids prepare. Because like you see these kids that come into the league and make hundreds of millions of dollars, and at 30, they're broke because they blew all that money. Darius Miles would be a perfect example. The East St. Louis kid, NBA straight out of high school, you know, was a superstar and, you know, was bankrupt at 26 because he didn't know how to handle his money. So, I mean, you hear those stories all the time. So there has to be a way to figure it out. I'm just not sure what the right answer is to that question.
Yeah, it's definitely well above our pay grade. And then you got the NIL stuff coming in now. So now college students are, you know, college athletes are getting paid properly, in a sense, and able to make money. But then you've got agents coming in, and not every agent is, you know, acting in good faith or very scrupulous. So you've got that going on with it as well. So it's just, I always look at it and I go, I'm in the sports industry. I talk about this stuff. I love sports. And I still sit there and go, wow, we pay these athletes and coaches way too much money for what they're doing, when the money could go to, you know, teachers and first responders and people that, you know, it could make a huge difference for, that make a huge difference in the world. But I get where we're at. I understand why things are the way they are, but it's always so baffling how it's the way it is right now. And it's nothing that we're eventually ourselves are going to be able to fix. If we can never fix what's going on right now. And it always just leads into more questions and questions and questions. And maybe that's the whole point of it all, is that they want us questioning it, but never actually finding out the answer.
Yeah. You know, it goes back to, it's just a tough answer to try to figure out, you know, how you make that all work.
It is. It is. But you know what? We'll keep talking about it as long as we possibly can, and doing whatever we can to help out in whatever way we can. So that's what we're here for. Speaking of this sort of stuff, Arch Manning, the nephew of Eli and Peyton, made his commitment today. And I don't think it was a big surprise, but I also think it was something that people didn't even know was happening, because they kept this commitment process very much under wraps, really low key, as much as you can, being a Manning, keeping things low key. Arch was choosing between Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Clemson, Virginia, and Texas. And he settled today on Texas as his commitment to college. And you look at it and you go, okay, Texas, Big 12, I don't know. But, well, they're going to the SEC. And about the time that he's going to probably be their starting quarterback will be the time that they are entering in to the SEC. So you look at this and you go, okay, it's a name. Steve Sarkisian got a big time name for his entry into the SEC. Is this the right move for Arch Manning? And is this the right move for Texas?
Oh, I mean, it's a huge move for Texas, because, you know, you're talking about one of the potential top quarterbacks coming into college football, you know, with the pedigree that he has, and everybody that's seen him play says he may be better than Peyton or Eli, either one. So, I mean, that's a huge move for Texas. For him, you know, I guess, it's where he feels comfortable. You know, a lot of people thought a couple of weeks ago that he was leaning towards Alabama and going to play for Nick Saban. So, you know, I guess this is where he feels the most comfortable, and hopefully it works out. It's going to be hard to say whether it's the right fit for a couple of years until you really see him fit into a system and see how all that works out. But, you know, being a Manning and knowing how talented that family is and everything we've heard about Arch Manning, I would imagine it's going to work out pretty well.
Yeah, over 5,700 yards and 72 touchdowns in his first 3 years of high school. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. And to have the pedigree of Eli and Peyton as your uncles, you know, that's pretty good. And then Archie as your grandfather. I mean, that's right. A good legacy to be following behind there. So, yeah, we'll definitely see how that plays out. And the fact that you may get to go down to Columbia and see him playing – you know, Mizzou, because Texas and Mizzou are going to be meeting up in the SEC at some point, whether it's the same division or it's just one of those annual rivalry games or what have you. You're probably going to see Arch Manning here in Columbia at least once in his college career.
Yeah, that'll be fun to see.
And hopefully we're there to cover it. You know, we're getting pretty good at that. So, all right. Well, we've dragged on long enough tonight, really sucked you in for over an hour now. I hope you guys enjoyed what you guys heard tonight and can continue the discussion on after we are done here. Scott, what do you got for us heading out tonight?
Nothing, man. Like I said, everybody enjoy some good baseball this weekend. You've got the Cardinals Cubs. And that's pretty much it. You know, you've got baseball going on right now. The NHL Finals trying to potentially wrap up over the weekend. Hopefully not. Hopefully Tampa and Pat Murray can keep that series going a little bit longer. But no, other than that, man, just everybody enjoy their weekend as we get closer to the holiday coming up next weekend. Everybody go out there, be safe, stay cool, stay warm, stay cool, stay dry, stay comfortable. You'll be warm, just walk outside. But stay cool, stay safe, have a good weekend, and we'll touch base with people next week at some point, I would imagine.
Yeah, we certainly will. We got a couple of big things on the horizon as well that we will be releasing as soon as we get some confirmation on those. So you may see us out and about at a couple of places, and you may see some new faces on the show as well as we get some interviews set up and some surprises in store as well. So make sure you guys tune in whenever we're on and enjoy the sports action as it goes on, because it's a year-round thing, whether it's you're a Cardinal fan, a Blues fan, a St. Louis City SC fan, because there's some news coming out there as well, another new signing coming out, a young German that is going to be joining this team here. The announcement for that coming very, very soon. So make sure you do that. And if you got a chance to go pick out your seats, make sure you send us the picture. Show us where you're sitting at, because I'll be in the supporter section next year. So I will be at the St. Louis City games. But send us your pictures. Tell us where you're sitting at if you've already gotten a chance to pick out your seats. And we'll definitely be joining you for that as well. But we're going to take off for tonight. Enjoy the Cards-Cubs games this weekend. Get yourself prepped up for the Marlins as well. Have fun, stay safe, stay cool, and we will see you guys next week.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.